This is the Global Politics of Food, a special report from American Radio Works. I'm Deborah Amos. The American patent system offers its inventors a deal. You come up with something that's useful and novel, and we'll protect your invention for a time so that all of society can benefit. The light bulb comes to mind. But 20 years ago, the whole idea of patents broadened immeasurably when a deeply divided U.S. Supreme Court allowed someone to patent a simple life form, a bacteria known to gobble up oil molecules. Since then, companies in the U.S. have been patenting plant varieties, and this has prompted fundamental questions of ownership and accusations of biopiracy. In part two of our report, Sandy Tolan has the story of the problems caused by a patent issued to a simple bean. Color yellow, origin debatable.
Ilza, I'm no good at being noble, but it doesn't take much to see that the problems of three little people don't amount to a hill of beans in this crazy world. Someday you'll understand that.
You know, Bogart may be right, but sometimes in this crazy world, a hill of beans can add up to a hell of a problem. In our case, we start with three people whose livelihoods are tied to the mystery of the yellow bean. Why a mystery? Well, first there's a question of origin.
The house due to the east of us here is the house that I was raised at and the farm that I grew up on.
Meet bean person number one, Larry Proctor, in jeans, western shirt, and red beard. We're on the western slope of the Colorado Rockies, in a stunning valley framed by the San Juans, the Ragged's, Needle Rock.
The mountains to the northeast hide the town of Aspen.
From the southeast, the Gunnison River runs down Black Canyon and into irrigation canals to water this hard, rocky valley and its rows of corn and peas, onions, and beans. It's in this place, a few miles away, that Larry Proctor began work on what he calls a new invention.
There's where we planted the yellow beans. We planted them here because at that time, none of this farm ground in this area here grew beans.
In Mexico a while back, Larry Proctor bought a bag of beans at a local market. Some of them were beans he'd never seen before, creamy color with a yellowish tint. He was curious, so he brought them over to his friend Harold, a retired dairyman whose home sat on a piece of land far from other bean fields, so that the two men could try out an idea without fear of cross-pollination from other plants. They laid the seeds in the earth and began to watch generation after generation, selecting each time for ever yellower colors.
Every day he'd call up and say, well, this one's flowering, that one's flowering. Man, those are mondo leaves. And he'd say, come over.
With each generation, Proctor says, the roots ran deeper than other bean plants, the pods more hardy, more resistant to moisture.
I started getting the idea that there was something going on and that there might be something worthwhile out of our basically playing. Eventually, it just kind of like a light, just kind of dawned.
This was special, Proctor thought, and he wanted to protect it. So he applied for and got a plant variety protection certificate from the USDA, which gave his family-run company exclusive rights to multiply the new creation, the Enola bean, after his wife's middle name. Then he went a step further to the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office to apply for a patent for his new invention. This would prevent others from developing any new beans based on the Enola, and he thought it would give herding farmers in this valley a chance to grow beans that could fetch a better price. In 1999, the government awarded the patent to Proctor's company. The basis of the patent? Its color. 1,200 miles to the south, and bean person number two.
Right now, we are seeing here a lot of different kinds of beans, some alubia beans, some canario beans, some sufrado beans, grown for test.
This is Martin Robles, an agronomist who works with a bean cooperative in Los Mochis, near Topolobampo in the Sea of Cortez. We stand on the soil of the Rio Fuerte Valley, good land for beans, watered by the rivers of the Sierra Madre. All around us are men with clipboards and baseball caps, fingering leaves, crouching in front of seed pods. It is here, Robles says, that Mexican breeders came up with their own new life form. He says the yellow beans had been around. Years ago, archaeologists discovered yellow beans in a cave in the Peruvian Andes and dated them back at least four millennia to before the Incas. Thousands of years later, Mexican agronomists crossed two yellow-tinted varieties and came up with a modern version of the yellow bean. This was back in 1978. They called it Mayacoba, after a nearby village in Sinaloa State. Mayacobas have been coming out of this valley, thousands of tons worth, ever since.
It is ironic that people here develop that varieties of beans, that they actually have a name for the community that first grow them, Mayacoba beans. Some researchers here have devoted many years to do research and experiments, and that somebody claimed them as their own invention.
All this brings us to bean person number three. In her Nogales, Arizona warehouse, buzzing with forklifts carting not beans, but fresh produce from semi-trailer to drive-in cooler. If Rebecca Gilliland had her way, the coolers wouldn't even be running. This warehouse would be choked with bags of yellow beans. Instead,
We have eggplants, we have Roma tomatoes, we have cucumbers, we have pickles.
But not a hill of beans in sight. In the early 90s, Gilliland retired as a small oil producer in California and came to Arizona wanting to do something at the onset of the North American Free Trade Agreement. She traded produce for a couple of years, but all the time kept thinking of the yellow beans she ate as a child, 200 miles to the south in Obregón, Mexico.
Like in 1994, I was missing over here in the United States beans that eating in Mexico, you know, there's the one I grew up with, you know, the Peruano Mayacoba, you know, it's a very, very delicious. Once you eat these beans, you never eat the pinto again. Besides the taste, this doesn't give you gas. You know what I mean?
Mexicans love these beans, Rebecca Gilliland thought, and more Mexicans are living in the U.S. So she started talking to Martin Robles' colleagues down in Los Mochis about exporting the Mexican yellows. Soon she was doing it, building up the business slowly, working on the distributors and grocery chains.
They don't want to buy in the beginning. I said, well, don't buy it. Just let me put it there. If you sell it, good, you pay for it. If you don't, I come and pick it up. So they did, you know. As soon as the consumers know that they're bringing that kind of bean into the United States, they started requesting it.
The first year, Gilliland says, she imported 500,000 pounds of yellow beans, then 1 million, and by 1999, she says, she was up to 6 million pounds, or about a semi-truck load every couple of days. The next year, she says, business was to triple. The market was ready.
In 99, the whole dream, you know, collapsed, you know.
That's when a letter arrived from Larry Proctor's company in Colorado saying they held the patent for the yellow bean.
And it was against the law for me to continue bringing that bean from Mexico. They say they very proudly notified me that they own the patent, you know, they invented. In the beginning, I think it was a joke.
In fact, Proctor's company now owned the U.S. patent for any beans falling within a range of yellow on the color spectrum. And so Larry Proctor, with associates and legal team, flew down for a meeting with Becky Gilliland on the border.
They asked me when I started selling the beans, you know. And I told the guy, I said, way before you invented. And these beans are bringing legally declared through the customs, you know. I mean, I'm not smuggling anything. And I said, it's very surprised for me that you just invented when I've been eating for 30 years, you know.
Proctor suggested they could work it out if she paid a licensing fee, up to 6 cents per pound. For bringing in the very beans she grew up eating, Gilliland didn't think so. So Proctor's lawyers slapped a patent complaint on her desk, saying, you are legally served.
So they proceed to get up and leave.
Now, suddenly, this was no ordinary hill of beans, and a lot more than three people were fighting over it. Some were lawyers, some were farmers, and some represented an astonished Mexican government.
We get to the point that we say, well, I don't know, this guy where they took the idea, they could register something that's used all the way back to the Aztecs, or more.
Ricardo Hernandez Munoz is a commerce specialist in the International Affairs Division of Mexico's Secretary of Agriculture.
I thought, well, let's register hamburgers then, and we'll charge a penny for every hamburger that an American eats. It's the same way. It's something that's part of the country. You cannot take it out just and say, hey, I discovered a jello bean. Sorry, my friend, that has existed for more than nations.
Bean breeders in the United States and Latin America tend to agree. The Center for International Tropical Agriculture, or CIAT, in Cali, Colombia, is challenging Proctor's patent. The action is pending before the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. CIAT holds 260 kinds of yellow beans in its public seed collection. It has done DNA analysis comparing six of those yellow varieties to Proctor's beans. The findings, according to Center Director Joachim Voss.
We're comparing the genetic fingerprint of the Enola beans with the most likely candidates in our gene bank. And what we've found preliminarily is that we have an identical print with a number of other varieties that we have in our gene bank.
Plant geneticists say there wasn't enough time between when Proctor first bought the beans in Mexico, 1994, according to his patent application, and when he first applied for the patent, to make a real invention. Proctor now says he went to Mexico in 1990. Hasn't been back since, he says again and again, a timeline which could give more credibility to his claim of having had sufficient breeding time to invent a new bean.
As they come across that conveyor off the top of the roof, you can see where they're dropping into this bin.
Back on the western slope, Jason Proctor, Larry's son, is flanked by rows of one-ton bags of yellow beans. Before him, a quivering, bubbling, dry yellow river. Beans on the march down the sorter. I pick up a handful. They look to me a lot like the Mayacobas from Mexico. I'd like to look at the two kinds side by side, but Larry Proctor says no.
We'll leave all seed samples here.
What's that?
I'll have you throw your samples back.
On the advice of counsel, he says, I can't take them with me. Later, by the patch of land where the Enola was born, Larry Proctor insists the Enola is not the same as the Mayacoba.
It's not. It's not of the same color. It's not the same as what I started with here.
This seems as good a time as any to pull out some beans, yellow and from Mexico, from my pocket.
You know what? I brought a few beans. Do these look familiar?
Notice the darkness of the bean and how round it is here. When you were at my warehouse, you saw beans that were more oblong.
So these are different to you. These beans look yellow. Your beans look yellow. But you see a difference.
I can see a difference.
So, I ask Proctor, if they are so different, then how could the beans from Mexico be infringing on your patent? He suggests that some of the beans Becky Gilliland was importing could actually have been Enolas. He tells the story of some Enolas he shipped down to a trade show in Mexico City a few years ago. They never arrived. Perhaps, he suggests, they were intercepted. Or there's the possibility that Mexican migrants who work the fields nearby during picking season could be responsible.
They stock up on yellow beans for their trip home. And where they take it and what they do with that is not always known to us.
It's not clear why anyone would want to take Larry Proctor's Enolas to Mexico and re-export them to the U.S. when Mexico has had the Mayacoba for decades. Beyond that, a question lingers. Is the Enola truly a novel form of bean, as patent law requires, or not? Whatever differences may exist between the Enola and the Mayacoba, when it comes to the marketplace, they seem to be treated pretty much the same. A bean trader in Denver says every time he gets a bag of Enolas from Larry Proctor, he slaps a Mayacoba label on it so consumers know what they're getting. Warehouses in LA and Chicago say, as far as they're concerned, the beans are interchangeable. Most seem to agree that this niche Latino market in the U.S., dominated now by Proctor's Enola beans, was created with the initiative of Rebecca Gilliland, the would-be bean trader in Nogales.
Even my own customers say, well, what happened, Becky? I say, you're the pioneer, and you're the one left behind in these things. And ho, 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 you know, those guys keep selling. They got the market, you know, that I opened. And what I got, zero.
Gilliland says after Proctor demanded that U.S. customs agents begin inspecting her yellow bean shipments at the border, and with Proctor's lawsuit and demands of up to 6 cents a pound for a licensing fee, her Mexican growers had had enough. In Mexico, not even a trickle of beans heads north to the border. Anticipating NAFTA, the bean co-op in the Rio Fuerte Valley made a big investment in the sorters and stoners that made for an export-quality yellow bean, equipment that now lies idle, except when curious visitors pass. Bean breeders all over the U.S. wonder, if you can patent a yellow bean, Why not a black bean, or a red bean, or a navy bean? Is this the proper way, they ask, to use the patent system? Another U.S. patent has been granted to a popping bean whose origin lies in Peru, and to a variety of American basmati rice with genetic heritage in the Indian subcontinent. And there are patents for corn and soybean, genetically engineered to resist herbicides, and rice infused with vitamin A. And for pesticides based on the genetic property of the neem tree in India. Back down to Colombia now, and SIAT director Joachim Voss.
The problem arises in an increasingly competitive global climate that corporations and individuals seek any means available to gain competitive advantage.
In the current climate, public seed banks like SIAT are now demanding that researchers in the U.S. and elsewhere sign agreements not to use the seed for commercial purposes, lest this public knowledge get locked up by private interests. Now Dr. Voss's colleagues at SIAT find themselves urging third world countries to lay claim to their genetic heritage before someone else claims it. Dr. Voss also suggests protecting a name, like France did for champagne or the Scots did for Scotch whiskey, but India has not done for basmati. As crop varieties come increasingly under the patent system, he says, farmers in the third world will now have to get their minds around an utterly foreign concept.
I've worked with farmers in Asia, Africa, Latin America. Universally, those farmers freely exchange varieties between themselves as a form of reciprocal seed exchange. And they're delighted when somebody else recognizes the value of the varieties that they are using. For them, the idea that you might put proprietary claim on a variety just seems like it's coming from the moon, if I can use that expression. I mean, it's just totally outside of their realm of social values.
Yet others say the response should not be for everyone to just lock up their genetic heritage.
When you have a patent on something like this yellow bean, or on anything coming out of the neem tree, or this basmati rice case, people in the developing countries respond typically with real anger because they view their own property as being stolen. And I think this is a very understandable reaction.
John Barton specializes in patent law and biotechnology at the Stanford Law School.
I am at the same time quite concerned if the result of that action is to keep the world, including those countries, from having the benefit of the genetic resources that are in those countries.
There's too much at stake, Barton argues, of potential benefit to humanity. In the past, increases in crop yields have come from public research. Now, some believe that the promise for another green revolution lies in private hands. Barton and many others are convinced a good patent system can protect legitimate innovation in the service of humanity. So the problems really do add up to more than a hill of beans in this crazy world. More, by the way, than the two little piles in my hands, Mayacobas from Mexico in one hand, and in the other, Larry Proctor's Enolas, sent by a third party in Colorado. With these samples, you can tell a slight difference. The Mayacobas are a little bigger, a little more yellow. This is Sandy Tolan for NPR News and American Radio Works.
Still to come, more on beans. This time, the coffee variety. We'll explore whether a better deal for Central American coffee growers can remove the guilt from that cup of designer coffee. Major funding for American Radio Works comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with additional project support from the Institute for Global Studies at the University of Minnesota. For more on the global politics of food, visit our website at AmericanRadioWorks.org. You're listening to The Global Politics of Food, a special report from American Radio Works and NPR, National Public Radio.